ברוכים, ברוכים הנמצאים. We are studying today שיעור לפואה שלמה אוריאל בן בלוריה ואסתר בת לאה אלה רפנה להם. Today שיעור will be studied לנשמת במשה חיים בן ברל בלבל. This is just introduction. לוח השם תניחנו בגן עדן, אמן. I didn't say anything yet, ladies. I'm just warming up. We are studying Parashat Vayetze. It is important to have a background of our parasha. Last week we read the very dramatic story how Yaakov Abinu went into his father, Yitzhak, dressed like his brother, Esav, and he received the blessings. I'm not going to say he stole the blessings, because to say he stole it means that it wasn't his, but the blessings belonged to Yaakov. So he only received what was coming to him, but he had to receive it in such a way. That's for another discussion. And then Esav, when he came in to get the blessings that he thought he deserved, Yitzhak said, it's too late, I gave it to your brother. He says, what do you mean you gave it to your brother? I'm Esav. I only have one beracha. It's given out already, you lost. And Yitzhak gives Esav a token beracha. And Esav now plans to kill Yaakov. He got so angry, he's going to kill him. Not figuratively. He's going to kill him, he wants to kill him. Rivka is worried that Esav is going to kill Yaakov, so she tells Yaakov, you have to run away. You have to leave town, you have to run on the road, because if Esav catches up with you, it's going to be not good, and he goes. At the same time, Yitzhak Avinu tells Yaakov, also instructions, I want you to go to Haran, my family is over there. I want you to go find a wife from these girls over here. This is proper. So our parasha begins. Vayetzei Yaakov, and Yaakov leaves. He's on the run, and he's running to go to Haran. That's his destination. On the way to Haran, he almost gets there. He's at the outskirts of the city of Haran. He can see already the houses. And all of a sudden he says to himself, wait a minute. I just passed the place where my father and my grandfather prayed. In Jerusalem, there's the place of the Beit HaMikdash, or the future Beit HaMikdash, Har HaMoriah. Today we call the Temple Mount. I passed that place and I didn't stop to pray. How did I get all the way here to Haran? It slipped his mind. He said, how did I pass this holy place and I did not stop and deliver a prayer? You know what it's like to have deal, just so we can get an understanding. It's like somebody went to Israel and they spent 2 weeks in Israel, and then they come back to the airport. And then they get on the plane and they land in London. And when they get to London, they say, wait, I was just in Israel. I didn't go to the Kotel to pray. I was there for two. What was I doing there? I didn't stop at the Kotel to make a prayer, to make a wish, to make some sort of. So the guy in London decides, you know what? I got to go back to Israel. Even though it's a 4-hour flight, I have no choice. It cannot be. Somebody's going to ask me, you went to Israel? Yeah. You went to the Kotel? No. You didn't go to the Kotel. What did you do? You ate the oranges or you ate falafel? What did you do for 2 weeks? You have to go to the Kotel. You have to pray. So that's what happened in a mashal. I'm just giving you a mashal, a parable. What happened to Yaakov? He got to Haran, and then he said, wow, I passed Jerusalem. I didn't even stop off to pray. So the Pasuk writes, a miracle of miracles, Vayifga b'makom. All of a sudden, he reached the place. Now, if I don't know any commentary, I would say he made a U-turn. He went all the way back, however many days it took him to get back, and he reached the place. But the commentaries don't say that. Rashi says, "Vayivka b'makom, vayivka." It sounds like it was sudden. It's like when you bump into somebody. So vayivka, he bumped into the place. Such a long trip, it should have been expected. Why would the Torah use the word vayivka? So Rashi says, "Lelamidka shekafsa lo ha'ares." From here we learn that the land came to him. This is something that we have no understanding of. That means that the man is in London, and he says, oh, I got to go back to Jerusalem. So he goes to Heathrow, and he's at the gate to get on the plane, and all of a sudden, he sees he's in Jerusalem. There he's there. It took him 1 second. But you've got, now to get here. This is called Kivitzat HaDerech. God sometimes, to help the tzaddik, he makes shortcuts for him. What normally takes 4.5 hours by jet, to the tzaddik it takes a short amount of time. Good. So what happens over there? Vayivka b'makom. Now he's going to pray. So Rashi says, vayivka, the word vayivka also means to pray. And Rashi quotes a pasuk, lashon tefillah. Ve'lamadnu, and from here we learn, shetiken tefilat arbit. From here we learn that Yaakov Avinu established the third prayer of the day. It was at this point when it says, Vayivka b'makom, he prayed in the place. This is the Temple Mount. There's a rabbi called Sifte HaChamim. He says, Vayivka b'makom, v'nikram makom al shem shehu mekomo shel olam. God has many names. One of the names of God is called Makom. Maybe you heard this name once before. We say it in Haggadah Shel Pesach. Baruch HaMakom, Baruchu, Baruch Shenatatu L'Amo Yisrael, Baruchu. HaMakom, Makom is the name of God. It's a name that we're allowed to say. Makom literally means place. So it says, Vayifga b'makom. He prayed to the Makom. He prayed to God, who is called Makom. Let's continue, because I want to go back to that word in a moment. I just want to give you an overview. Then it says, Vayalin sham. He went to sleep. Kibah Hashemesh. Because the sun set. Vayishkav b'makom ahu. And he slept in that place. This is all we need to know, this pasuk. So basically he went to Haran, he made a U-turn, he didn't have to go all the way back, the land came to him. He fulfilled his wish to pray. That becomes the prayer of Arbit. The sun sets. And after the sun sets, Yaakov goes to sleep, and he sleeps in that place. Rashi points out, "Vayishkav b'makom ahu." He slept in that place, implying that there was another place that he didn't sleep. So Rashi says that actually there's a part of this story that the text does not tell us explicitly. It says Yaakov Avinu made a pit stop on the way to Haran. He stopped off at the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Ever. There was a big yeshiva at the time. They called the yeshiva Shem Ve'Ever. Like, okay, you have the Mir Yeshiva. They didn't have a Mir Yeshiva in those days. The yeshiva was called Shem Ve'Ever. So he stopped off there. How long did he stop off there? For 14 years. That's not a pit stop. That's not to get a cup of coffee. He stopped for 14 years in order to study Torah. And our rabbis tell us that during those 14 years that he sat in Yeshivat Shem Ve'Eved, he did not sleep in a bed. Doesn't mean he didn't sleep. You cannot go 14 years without sleeping. The Gemara says you cannot even go 3 days without sleeping. The body needs to sleep. But Yaakov Avinu did not lie down for 14 years. That means he sat by his desk with the book, the Sefer, And if he got tired, he puts his head down. That's how diligent, we can imagine the superhuman strength of Yaakov Avinu. 14 years just sitting with a sefer, studying, no urge to lie down, just to take a nap. This is the greatness of Yaakov. When is the first night that he went to sleep? Vayishkav v'makom ahu. In that place over there, finally he put his head down to rest, and he lied down. Today I want to explain to you this concept that God is called Makom. In this class we're very accustomed to trying to explain the different names of God and what they represent and how they're used and its context. But I don't think we ever spent proper time explaining Makom. Well, here the Torah says, Vayifga b'makom. And as I explained, the Siftei HaKamim writes, he's called that Shehu Mekomo Shel Olam. This, I never understood what it means. What do you mean? He's the place of the world? What do you mean he's the place of the world? Mekomo Shel Olam. I always understood, to be honest with you, very simply. He's called Makom because he's everywhere. I thought it's like Bechol Makom. He's just in every place, wherever you point. Hashem is here, Hashem is there, like the old song that the kids used to sing. So Hashem is called Makom, because no matter whatever place you point your finger, God is there. So He's called Makom. But they're not saying that over here. They're saying, Shehu Mekomo Shel Olam. He's the Makom of the Olam. He's the place of the world. The place of the world? Confusing. I saw a very nice interpretation from the Maharal from Prague, almost exactly a year ago from today. I was in Prague, and I was able to go to the Kever, the Tziyun, the tombstone of the Maharal from Prague. This is a great tzaddik. He's buried in the old cemetery, in the old city of Prague, and right across from his synagogue where he used to pray, the Alte Neu Synagogue. The old synagogue, beautiful, they restored it. You can go see it. It's incredible to see the history in that synagogue. So the Maharal says like this, and I'm quoting, Shoresh Hamila, the root of the word Makom, because every word has a root, he says is Kum. Or kiyum. Kiyum is something that has sustainability. It exists. It lasts. He said, something that's in its place, so it has a kiyum. Something that's in a makom, it lasts because it's not moving. It's sturdy. It's stable. But something that's always moving, so going from one place to another place, so it has no stability. So with this he explains that God is Mekomo Shel Olam, that means God is Mekayem Ha'olam. God is the one that sustains the world. God is the one that is holding the world, so to speak. So He's Mekomo Shel Olam, not the place of the world. He is the one that is the Mekayem Ha'olam. You know what it's like? As you can give it a mashal. I'll say a better mashal. Better. That's good. We say, Me'ata mehayet kulam. That's what we say. That God is mehayet kulam. God sustains the whole creation. We believe that if God would take His mind off the creation, even for a second, the world would go back to tohu vavohu. God is creating the world every moment. Now the scientists are starting to accept that. Many years ago, when they looked at the human body, they looked at Him as alive. But now they look at Him as the human body is being regenerated every second. Every second cells are dying and new cells are being created. Skin, old skin is falling off and new skin is being created. The body is now being recreated every single moment. God is Mekayem HaOlam every second. He's Mekomo Shel Olam. The example I was going to give is from a pasuk that we say in the Az Yashir every day. The pasuk says, when God was talking about how he destroyed the Egyptians. So Moshe Rabbeinu says this. Natita yeminecha tibla'em ha'aris. God, you tilted your hand and the Egyptians got swallowed up. So that she explains, picture that the world is in God's hands. Picture that we're the world and somebody's hands are underneath it. And the hands are holding up the whole world. And when God tilts his hand a little, all of a sudden some people are going to start falling off. Some people are going to slip. So the pasuk says, Natita yeminecha. You tilted your hand, and who was on that side? The Egyptians. And they got swallowed up. Or for example, when you see God's hands, we say every day in the pasuk, Poteach et yadecha. God opens his hands, and he brings down sustenance to the entire world. So that's what it means, makom. He's mekomo shel olam, that the world is in his hands, and therefore he sustains it. He is giving us stability. That is what the Maharal from Prague says. But I didn't come to explain that today. That is just simple interpretation. Makom is from the Lashon kum, kiyum. But I saw an interpretation that I think is very appropriate for everyone. Maybe not at this exact moment, but the way life is, this understanding will unfortunately come into play at one time or another. Whenever you say the name of God, Yudke Vavke, for example, that's the God of mercy. Whenever you see Elohim, that's judgment. I think last week we mentioned the holy name of God, Shin Dalet, and then Yud. We talked about that being the name of fertility. That's also the name of protection. And every Shem has its purpose, has its Kavanah. Of course, God is one. God is one. Doesn't mean that there's two different Hasb v'Shalom, you don't have to think like that. It just means the way we perceive God at that moment. Sometimes we perceive Him in mercy, sometimes we perceive Him in judgment. I saw brought down from one of the great rabbis of Eretz Israel. He says, Makom is the power that God has that He establishes each person and puts him in his situation, in his place, where he lives, in his situation of life, under his circumstances. God is the one that's koveya, everybody's makom. He puts everybody in life in a certain designated spot. And if a person finds himself in a certain position, one must know that that was done by design, by the makom. There's a God upstairs that Lehavdil, like a chess player, is moving all the pieces to certain spots. When a chess player moves, it's done with thought. There's a reason why he moves forward or across. Every person, wherever they are in life, even if it's not in a good place, maybe hear some people say this once in a while, I'm not in a good place. What do you mean you're not in a good place? It's Brooklyn, you're in the same place for 50 years, have nothing changed? No, they mean themselves, their physical place, they're not talking about their zip code. They're talking about where they are, what's going on in their life. Maybe they're in a depression, maybe they have certain unanticipated or unrealized dreams, or they're going through a hard time in Parnassah, or they have, God forbid, a sickness, or something's going on in the family. I'm in a bad place. The name Makom is the name of God that reminds us that wherever a person is at any moment of his existence, that comes from Mekomo shel Olam, the one that determines the moves, the one that determines position. As an example, I think the best example is Yaakov Abinu. Yaakov Abinu, how old was he when he left his father's house? In this story, when he ran away, we think of him Well, he's running away from his brother that's trying to kill him. Must be a bunch of teenagers that were a little, feisty with each other. So maybe he says 18, 19.
17.
He was less than that. But he'll get to 70 soon in our story. He was exactly 63 years old. 63 years old is, it's not a young man, let's put it that way. I don't want to get myself in any trouble. 63 years old. What was he doing for the first 63 years of his life? The Pasuk says, V'Yaakov Ishtam, Yoshev Ohalim. He was sitting in the tents. Yaakov, what do you think? He was a Bedouin? What do you mean he's sitting in the tents? The rabbis tell us he was sitting in the yeshivot. He sat and studied for 63 years. In our terminology, we would call that Gan Eden. He just sat in yeshiva and studied all day and all night. Not a worry, not a threat, not a concern. This is utopia in this world. That somebody can be so free from any responsibilities of anything besides learning Torah, which is the highest order, which is the greatest career. Yaakov Avinu was able to do that for 63 years. Today, you have boys that graduate yeshiva. They go get married. Maybe they say to themselves, we're going to sit in the kollel for 2 years. That's very impressive. So at 26 years old, they say, okay, we sat in the kollel for 2 years, now they have family and stuff. They need to go get a job. Okay, but it's still impressive. They were able to sit in kollel study for 2 years. Imagine you see somebody that's 63. Hey, what are you doing? I'm still in the kollel. Still in the kollel. You've been there for 63 years. You're lucky. You won the lottery of life. This is Yaakov. He didn't move from the place. And then all of a sudden, overnight, listen to the story of a person. This is the story of everybody. Overnight, with almost no warning, his mother tells him, you got to leave, you got to run. He becomes a fugitive. All of a sudden he has a brother that's coming after to kill him. What happened to him? His whole life turned upside down. And now he's told he has to run to his uncle's house. His uncle is Laban. Laban is the worst person. You think Esav is bad. Where do you think Esav learned from? Esav was a student of Laban. He learned from his uncle. Laban was the grandfather of Bilam and Balak. The worst, tricky pranksters, sly people. You're going to ask me, so why they call him Laban? Laban is white. Because he was so sly. Laban is white. I didn't say Naval, I say Laban. You say Naval, I said Laban. I know you're changing the words around, but they didn't call him Naval, they called him Laban. Laban is white. Why they call him white? Because he was so sneaky that he could chop a person up and you don't even know he did it. He walks away, I didn't do anything. It's so tricky that you don't even know that you're getting tricked. With a smile, with kavod and everything. It's like a salesman. He looks so nice in the store and he's selling you this and he's selling you that and please take this. So you're thinking as you're in front of him, what is the nicest guy? Then you walk in and say, well, what did I buy over here? What did he give me? What did it? Then you realize he sold you stuff you didn't need and it was extra money. You know, that's Laban. He gives the impression that he's white. This is in the parentheses what I'm telling you now. There was a rabbi called Al-Sheikh, Rabbi Moshe Al-Sheikh. He was a great darshan. So great was Rabbi Moshe Al-Sheikh. The Arizal used to go to his classes. Could you believe it? The Arizal would go hear the dirash of Rabbi Moshe Al-Sheikh. He would be dirash on the Torah. One time, the Al-Sheikh was giving a dirash on Laban. How Laban tricked Yaakov. It says he tricked Yaakov 100 times. And the Arizal started laughing. So they came to Arizal. Arizal doesn't usually laugh. So what are you laughing? He says, I want to tell you something. But don't tell anybody. He says, when Rabbi Moshe Al-Sheikh gives a class, whoever he's talking about in the Bible, they come to hear the class. They want to hear what he's saying. So when Rabbi Moshe Eltzik was explaining the trickery of Lavan, he was explaining, and then he did this, and then he did that, and every time he said it, Lavan said, yes, that's, he's right, that's what I did. And then Rabbi Moshe Eltzik said something that Lavan didn't do. And Lavan said, well, that's a good idea, I wish I would have done that. So Arizal started laughing. He says, Rabbi Moshe Eltzik is telling Lavan what he should have done. And Yaakov has to go to this guy's house and live there now. And what do you think? It was easy to live by Lavan? Lavan wanted to kill Yaakov Avinu. Not figuratively, he wanted to kill him. He wanted to kill Yaakov, he wanted to kill his children, his grandchildren. We say it in Haggadah Shel Pesach. She Paro lo gazar el ha-zikarim. Paro only decreed against the males. Ve-Lavan bikesh la'akor et hakol. Lavan wanted to uproot all of Israel. We see what he did. He makes his son-in-law work for 7 years, and he gives her the wrong wife. Isn't that nice? And then he comes like a tzaddik. No, listen, it's not right. She's older. I know she's older. I didn't want to marry. I wanted to marry the younger one. Now you start telling me about Minhag? Lavan's worried so worried about the custom all of a sudden? So look what happened to Yaakov. His life turns upside down. From a man that was sitting in the lap of luxury, Torah all day long, he woke up one morning, his mother told him, go get the blessings from your father. Oh, beautiful day, he gets blessings from his father. Now he figures he's going to go back to the yeshiva. All of a sudden the mother comes running. Yaakov, pack your bags. He goes, what happened? You have to run away. And he would run away, and he would become I'm not going to say a fugitive, but he would be on the run for the next 20 years. Until he would make his way home. And what troubles. This story over here doesn't end. On the way down to Haran, his nephew sees him. Esav's son, Eliphaz. Hey, Uncle Yaakov. How are you, nephew Eliphaz? He says, listen, I have bad news to tell you. He says, who died? He says, no, you're going to die. I'm going to die, I'm going to die, we're going to die, everybody's going to die. He said, no, you see, my father told me I have to kill you. I'm coming from Esav, you see, I have a power of attorney. He gave me rights to kill you. Yaakov said, what are you out of your mind? You're going to kill me? No, you know you're not to kill. What kind of business is this? Your grandfather is Yitzhak Abinu. You're the grandson of Yitzhak Abinu. You're going to murder? I know, but I have an affidavit. My father says I have to kill you. So what should I do? So Yaakov Abinu sees the guy's a little imbalanced. He really wants to kill him, but he's stuck because he can't really kill him. So Yaakov said, listen, we have a Gemara that says if a poor man is like he's dead. So take all my money, and technically it's like you killed me. Eliphaz says, good. You know he took everything? You know what he left Yaakov with? His stick. That's all he left him with. Nothing. So much so, Yaakov couldn't continue traveling. He had to go to the ocean. He had no clothes. He's just waiting up to his neck, waiting. What is he going to do now? He has no clothes. He has a stick. He's with a stick. He took everything. 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 This is a good nephew. Not like me. So now what happened? The Midrash says Hashem helped him. There was a certain general or prince or a soldier, an officer, that died, and Yaakov Avinu was able to go take his clothes, and he got clothes. So he figured it out. But he comes to Lavan's house penniless. Look what happened to this man. You talk about somebody's life that turns upside down. Ask him, where were you the day before? A day before, I don't know, nothing was going on. My life was very, very straight. No bumps, no nothing. For 63 years, it was the same schedule. Get up, learn Torah, pray, learn Torah, nothing. It was the most consistent, balanced life. And all of a sudden, I have Esav to the right, I have Lavan to the left, all his money is gone. Running. And that's why our rabbis tell us, when the Torah tells us Yaakov Avinu prayed, which name of God does it use? Vayifga b'makom. Because Yaakov Avinu needed to remind himself that the place of man where he is determined by God. And now he had to come to terms with his new makom. He says, obviously, this is part of my tikkun. This is part of my, to reach my perfection. This is part of my purpose of life. God wouldn't put me here if there wasn't a reason to be put here. Therefore, specifically now, the Torah uses the word makom. And Yaakov has to acclimate himself. And we're obligated to serve God under any conditions. We don't serve God under our conditions. Only when it's 72 degrees and it's perfect and we have a coffee and we slept 8 hours the night before. Oh, now I'm going to sit and learn. Now I can pray. But if one of the variables is not to our favor, I can't concentrate, I have a headache, or I didn't eat breakfast, or I have an issue, I have a business problem, or something's going on in the house. We do not use our situation as an excuse to run away from God. God puts us in a situation and we're supposed to serve Him under all cases. I want to say even further. Look what the Pasuk is telling us. He prayed Arbit. Do you know that the Hachamim say, Avraham established Shachrit, Yitzchak established Mincha, and Yaakov established Arbit. It's not a coincidence. Hachamim say, each one of the Avot established a prayer that's suitable to their lives. Which means, Avraham's life, he had a good life. He was very popular. He was very wealthy. Wherever he would go, kings would come out to greet him. He rubbed elbows with Paro, with Avimelech. They call him a statesman. Nesi Elohim ata betochenu. Wherever he went, he was treated like a VIP, red carpet. Avraham was the founder of monotheism in his time. He was respected by all. People came to him for blessings. He had chesed. He was so kind and he was so hospitable. Avraham is chesed. And therefore he establishes the prayer of the morning. Because in the morning, light represents kindness. Because in light you can see everything. In light, everything is apparent. In light, everything is clear. In light, there's no confusion. That's why the Gemara makes such a point that on Friday night, we must have candles in the house. There must be light in the house. Because where there's light, there's peace. Instead, people are tripping on each other and people can't see. So Avraham Avinu establishes the morning prayer because he himself, his life was like the morning. It was good. It was all kindness. Avraham is chesed. The pasuk says, "Lehagid baboker hasdecha." In the morning, everything is chesed. That's why, right before the Amidah in the morning, in Shacharit, there's a paragraph. The paragraph is read like this: "V'yatziv v'nachon v'kayam v'yashad v'ne'eman v'ahu v'habib v'nechmad v'na'im v'nuran v'adin u'tukan u'kubal v'tov v'yafe." 15 words. And you know what these words are saying? God, you're right, and you're just, and you're proper, and you're good, and you're great, and you're pleasant. Because in the morning, when everything is clear to us, there are certain moments in life where everything is good. That's represented in the Boker. So when everything is working good, you have a job, and you're married, and you have your children, and you have your health. That's Boker. That's the life of Avraham Avinu. In those moments, of course, it's easy to come to God and say, you're great, you're unbelievable, you're nachon, you're tov, you're yafeh, you're phenomenal. Yitzhak Avinu, he also had a good life, but we saw already in his life a beginning of decline. Avraham Avinu has some challenges in his life. He has some issues with some kings. He digs wells, and the king's men cover the wells that he dug. Already he has some difficulties. And at the end of his life, Yitzhak Avinu goes blind. He doesn't leave the world like Abraham left the world. He leaves the world in darkness. And our rabbis say, he established the prayer of Mincha. Because Mincha is the afternoon prayer. When do we pray Mincha? When the sun is already starting to go down. With Shacharit, we're praying when the sun is rising. That's when the time is good. That's the time of a person's life that's prosperous. When the sun is rising. And then you start to decline. That's Mincha. But the sun is still up. It's still light. It's not bad yet. It's not gloomy yet. It's still light, but the sun is going down. That's Mincha time. When does Yaakov Abinu make his prayer? He made Arbit. His prayer is said in darkness. Because that's what his life was. His life went from something very rosy and very shiny and very illuminating. And all of a sudden, boom! Who shut the lights off? You know, some people, they scratch them. Said, how did I get here? What happened to my life? I used to be a normal person. I used to be a regular person. I used to be like everybody else. How did I become over here now a misfit? How did I become all of a sudden, all these things happen to me now? And so fast. That's the thing. It was so sudden, the change of place. And therefore Yaakov Abinu, he establishes Tefillat Arbit. That's the most suitable prayer for his life. And that's why in Arbit, right before the Amidah, there's also a paragraph, but it's not V'yatziv V'nachon. In darkness you can't say it's right, it's good, it's great, you're good. In darkness we don't see anything. In darkness we don't understand anything. We're confused in darkness. In the evening we're only able to say V'emunah kol zot. We have to say, God, we have emunah. We have to have trust that you know that this is where we're supposed to be. Obviously you put us here. Obviously you shut the lights. V'emunah kol zot. Lehagid baboker hasdecha v'emunah techa balelot. In the night. In the morning we say, Sabe'enu baboker hasdecha. Oh, baboker hasdecha. In the morning we have hazadim. But at night, emunah. But I want to say a very fine hidush. When did he pray Arbit? Did he pray when it got dark? The rabbis in the Gemara, in the Talmud, say not. What do you mean? I thought Arbit is at night. I don't know if you've seen this. I see it all the time. You ever see sometimes the people pray Arbit early? Oh, so you see it. For example, Shabbat, you see it a lot. They have the early minyan on Friday night, and they come home from shul, it's the light outside. You ask your husband, you ask your brother, did you pray Arbit? Of course I prayed Arbit, but it's the light outside. I thought Arbit is, well, it got to be dark. Why can't you pray Arbit? It's still light. What is this business? So you know what the answer is? Excuse me, I'm following the founder. Yaakov Avinu made Arbit. When did he pray Arbit? Let's look at the Pesukim now. Vayifga b'makom, that means he came back to Jerusalem, or better said, Jerusalem came to him. And we learned Vayifga means he prayed. He prayed to the makom. He prayed to the God that put him in this place. He accepted that where he is where he's supposed to be, and it's not going to shake him, and it's not going to take him out of his religiosity. And then what does the next Pasuk say? The next words, Vayalin Sham, he went to sleep, Kibah Hashemesh, because the sun came down. Implying that he prayed before the sun came down. So from here we learn that you're able to pray Arbit a little before the sun comes down. You don't have to wait till the sun comes all the way. Of course you cannot pray 2 o'clock in the afternoon. But as the sun is coming down, they call that plaga mincha. This is not a halachic shiur today. But you see that Yaakov prayed before the sun came down. But what does it mean, kibah hashemesh? The sun came down, so that she comments, mashma, sheshak alo hama pit'om. the sun just set immediately. It wasn't sunset time. Maybe it was 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Yaakov Avinu came back to the place. He only came back to pray. So he prayed. He's figuring, okay, now it's 3:15. I'm sure he prayed more than 15 minutes. That's how long we pray. It's not fair to say he prayed for 15 minutes. However long he prayed for. But sunset wasn't until 6. He finished praying, whatever it is. And he's figuring now, okay, let me start making my way back to Haran. Go back to London. All of a sudden, it gets dark. He looks at his watch. What's going on? 3:15, 3:30. God said, you think I'm going to let this Sadiq pass my place and he's not going to sleep for the night over here? No, nothing doing. I love this Sadiq. I'm not letting him go back. He has to sleep in my hotel over here. God loves this Sadiq, so he changes the whole world. The sun sets immediately. Now Yaakov says, I can't travel at night. He has no choice. Then he goes to sleep. Vayalin Sham Kibah Shemesh. He only went to sleep because the sun came down. He wasn't expecting the sun came down. I once heard one rabbi explain, Kibah Shemesh. Kibah means to extinguish. Kibah Shemesh. The sun extinguished. Somebody extinguished the sun over there. It disappeared. Eclipse. Why did it have to happen like this? Because this story is exactly what happened to Yaakov Avinu's life. His life was a sunny life. It was a normal, regular, good life. And all of a sudden, in midday, the sunset. This is sometimes, unfortunately, what happens in life. Not always is there a warning and a gradual, and a person gets a notice. And there were certain people just a few weeks ago that went to sleep with a house and a car. And the garage, and they woke up without a house, without a garage, without a car, without clothes, without anything. And the hurricane, and they found themselves standing online for food. And he asked the person, "What do you mean? You always been like this, collecting food online? What do you mean I was like? I was a regular guy. I used to drive a regular. I drove a Cadillac. I lived in a big house. What are you talking about? I'm standing online to get some beans. I never did this before." And he's standing online, can I have a sweatpants, please? Because I need a sweatshirt. What do you mean? You're taking clothes? What, since when do you take clothes? You always come here to take. I never came here before. I never went to the Red Cross to take clothes before. I lost my whole house. You were expecting it? Expecting it? I went to sleep rich. Last night I was rich. I woke up this morning. And he made ahalachti v'rekame shivani Adonai. This is what happens in life. We don't wish it in life. We wish to have not 63 years of stability. We want to have 630 years of stability. Amen. But this is what goes on. And we hear horror stories of people. People that go to doctors just for routine checkups. And all of a sudden the doctors tell them, you're very sick. Very sick. I didn't come here because I was sick. I came here just as a routine checkup. I came to see you. Just to give me the routine blood test. That it's good you came. Good. All of a sudden he finds himself that afternoon in the hospital with machines, with doctors, with this. He said, how did I get over here? What did I get over here? I woke up this morning, I was a normal guy. Now I'm on a Tehillim list. Now I'm on a... This is what happens. The sun sets immediately. And that's why it happens to Yaakov. That sun setting is symbolic. Not just so he can sleep in the place, but it's symbolic of his life, where a sun just sets mid-afternoon. But manan. And all of a sudden, a person finds himself, you talk about kifisat ha-derech, you talk about reaching a place quickly. Yaakov Avinu reached his new place very quickly. Forget about the land coming to him. His new situation in life hit him like a bolt of lightning. Where's this now? No shirt, no clothes, no nothing. He has a stick. And somebody comes to him, wow, you're the poorest man I ever saw. And Yaakov would tell him, you wouldn't believe it. This morning I was a wealthy man. Wealthy man. You couldn't be wealthy this morning. I'm telling you, my father's a billionaire. My grandfather's even a multi-billionaire. My father had his own army. My grandfather had his own army of 318 soldiers. He had a hotel. You have Hilton? My grandfather was the first, Abraham Hilton. He was the first one to have all these hotels. Navdil. Beratamel Tahor. My father was world-renowned. You can't believe me that I come from a prestigious family. Now, come on, when did this happen? I'm telling you, this morning it all happened. Yesterday I was sitting in yeshiva learning. Today I don't know where I am. Today I'm nothing. I'm in the ocean up to my neck waiting for somebody to lend me his boots. The Bashem Olahad. Vayifga b'makom. But our tradition says, I'm assuming that today's a day off for everybody, so I don't have to look at the clock. So, I mean, it's not a day off for me. To me, it's a regular day, of course. Watch what happens. Vayifga b'makom. Our tradition says that wherever a person is, it's for his benefit. Go try to explain that to somebody that lost his house and everything he had. Tell me, oh, it's okay, it's good, it's good for you. That's a nice consolation. Of course, you can't tell it to a person. It's something that you have to believe, but that a Kadosh Baruch Hu, he moved the piece because the piece has to be moved to that place. Lavdil, nobody's going to second guess the expert world champion in chess. Well, I moved the piece to a certain place, and everybody's looking at it. That's the dumbest move you could have made. I know what I'm doing. You're looking at this move. I already have anticipated the next 10 moves already. You're looking at this. Because I did this, it's going to cause him to do that, and it's going to cause the other guy. And all of a sudden, he wins the game. Checkmate. How did you checkmate? I thought you didn't understand what I did over there. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lavdil is moving the pieces in perfection, although we don't understand every move. Sometimes you have to wait till the checkmate. Let's talk about Yaakov Avinu for a second. He gets to Lavan's house. Seven and six. 20 years later, he leaves. What does he leave with? He leaves with 4 wives and 12 tribes. Not a bad day. 4 wives and 12 tribes. That means at the end of the day, he built Klal Yisrael. What a win. Here he's saying, what is God doing to me? Where is God taking me? And God brought him to a destiny that even Avraham Avinu did not reach. Because Avraham Avinu had Yishmael. That's a thorn. And Yitzhak Avinu had Esav. That's a thorn. And Avraham Avinu and Yaakov Avinu, Bechir Sheva Avot, he comes out with 12 diamonds. Shevatim, Shevteya, Edut Yisrael. No waste. No fat. Perfect. And we are here today because of those Shevatim. So in retrospect, when you look at the place that he was in, he was in a good place, of course. God says, you don't know what I'm doing. You think I know what I'm doing? You needed to go there because Lavan was holding on. He had 12 diamonds in his pocketbook. And you needed to go take them from Lavan. And why does God keep the diamonds by Lavan? There's a reason for that also. Why couldn't Yaakov go to a Rosh Hashiva's daughter and marry and make it nice? Because sometimes the neshamot of the great tzaddikim, God has to hide them in not an obvious place. Because if they're in an obvious place, the Satan will go after them and jeopardize them. So he puts them in the least expected place. Who's going to think that Laban's going to be carrying Reuven, Shimon, Levi in his pocketbook? So the Satan goes to Laban, and the guy's tricking everybody all day long. So the Satan has no clue. He says, when Lavan walks through the metal detector, the Satan tells Yaakov, Lavan, you don't have to walk through the metal detector. You don't have anything. We know you're not carrying anything. And he just walked through the metal detector with 12 shevatim in his pocket. God puts the great holiness in inconspicuous places. So Yaakov has to go there. And he's the tzaddik and he attracts them. Baruch kevod Adonai mekomo. In retrospect, bless God for the place. Baruch kevod Adonai mekomo. And now I'll tell you. Look at this Targum Yonatan ben Uziel that I found. And then I'm going to let you go. Look at this pasuk. It says, Vayifga b'makom, Vayan and Sham, he slept there, ki ba'ashemesh, with the sunset, Vayikach me'avneham makom. He took from the rocks. How many rocks did he take? So everybody knows, he took 12 rocks, he put them around his head, and they all became one rock. Look what the Targum Yonatan ben Uziel says. Temach Shimsha, the sunset, Unsev Arbea Me'abne Atra. He took 4 stones. Oh, Nushita. He took 4 stones. What does this mean? So I'm going to tell you the depth of this. God's name of mercy is what? Yudke Vavke. As you know, we have it here. Yudke Vavke. Yudke Vavke is 26. Yud is 10, and then 5 is 15, and then 11 is 26. How much is the word makom? Oh, makom. Mem, kof, that's 140. And Vav is 6, that's 146. And Mem, Makom is 186. I was going to try to somehow make Yudke Vavke and Makom equal. But how can I make something that equals 26 equal 186? It doesn't go. I'm even in Gematrias we could play around, but I'm 160 off. But watch magic. You see the Yud? Let's take the Yud of Yudke Vavke and times it by itself. That means 10 times 10. 10 times 10 is 100. He. He is 5. 5 times 5 is 25. 125 we have so far. And Vav is 6 times 6. That's 36. 125 and 36? 161. And then here is 5 times 5 is 25. 161 and 25 is 186. 186. So therefore, makom really is equal to yudke vavke, but not a regular yudke vavke. The ultimate yudke vavke. The yudke vavke that's compounded. The Yudke Bavke that's multiplied by, that's the ultimate mercy. But it's hidden. It's hidden in the word makom, you don't see it. But if a person starts to analyze why he's here and why things happen and what's the reason, you'll see that it's not just mercy, it's mercy plus. But we don't see it, so we can't call it Yudke Bavke. Because we only see mercy when somebody's giving candy, when somebody wins $1 million, when somebody has a good report. That's Yudke. But when somebody has bad things, you tell them, oh, that's Yudke Bavke times Yudke Bavke. That's compounded. What are you talking about? I don't see anything. So we call it makom. But it's hidden. That's why, God forbid, when somebody passes away, the custom is to console them. And the custom is to tell them, a makom, Yenachem etchem. What does it mean? The makom. God. God who's called makom. Why do we use that name in consolation? So we're telling the people, God is the one that changes everybody's place. Your loved one was alive yesterday. And now his place was just changed. He went from olam hazeh to Olam Abba. He changed addresses. You must know that that's not done by chance, or that's not done by mistake, or that's not something that was done arbitrarily. And Makom, you should know that was done by the God of Makom, the one that's in charge of locations. He moves locations constantly. But he's Makom. That's Yud Ke Vav Ke, that's Yud times Yud, and He times He, and Vav times Vav, and He times He. It's the ultimate mercy. God knows what he's doing. He took him at that moment for that purpose, for his tikkun. And then we tell the mourner that your position changed as well. Yesterday you were able to go to weddings and dance. Yesterday you were able to shave and take bathe and put on makeup and do all the things like regular people. Today your position changes. You cannot do any of those things. Now, instead of sitting on a regular chair like everybody else, your position changes. Now you must sit on the floor. Now all of a sudden, in one moment, because they gave somebody bad news, he cannot go to work. He cannot do anything. Everything is stopped. And we tell the mourner, the one that's in the place, is on the floor now. We say, Makom Yenachem, your place also was predetermined by God. And especially in a case where it's a sudden, all of a sudden the sun came down. What about the sun? Hear stories. I was just yesterday, we went, boom. So we say, Makom, this is again the Makom. This is Yaakov Abinu. And that's why I say, for us, in this long exile, in an exile that's a very dark exile. It's a dark exile for our nation, 2,000 years of persecution. It's a dark exile of personal tragedies of people. It's a dark exile for the Jews in Eretz Israel, as we're seeing now. Although there's a ceasefire, but nothing changed. Nothing changed in principle. This is just a short time out, so everybody could reload. I'm sorry to tell you that, but I think you all knew that. I think that's obvious. This doesn't get better in time. This only, unfortunately, gets more tenuous. It didn't come to scare anybody today. But this is the darkness of our exile. And therefore, for us, Tefillat Arbit is the most important prayer. We are living in a virtual Tefillat Arbit. And that's why in Arbit, there's a prayer that we say. Mishaneh itim u'mahalif et hazemanim. God, you're Mishaneh itim. You're constantly changing the times. You're changing moments. Mishaneh itim u'mahalif et hazemanim. This is what God does, and He does it suddenly. If one looked at the map of the Middle East just a year ago, say we have a strong ally in Egypt, Syria is scared from us, and you have Jordan and Lebanon are basically at ease, and all of a sudden 1 year later, Mishaneh itim u'mahalif et hazemanim. Now all of a sudden we see the Muslim Brotherhood taking over Egypt. They'll take over Syria eventually. And then Hezbollah in Lebanon, and then Jordan will be overthrown because that's the weakest of all the countries. And all of a sudden, we have nowhere to turn. We had a little hope. Look at this, in 1 year, everything. This is God changing the times, changing the places. And all of a sudden, Israel finds itself where you thought we cannot ever find ourselves in a worse place. We found ourselves in a worse place. You say, it can't get worse. It got much worse. But again, it's Makom. Makom, he knows what he's doing. What do you think? I don't want to tell you the end of the story. So I know the end already. It's a good ending. Everything's going to be fine. You have nothing to worry about. At the end of the day, you know, it's going to end up in some great holiday that we're going to celebrate. Like Pesach and Shavuot and Sukkot, doesn't mean another holiday, just as big, if not bigger. But in the interim, till the checkmate, till the pieces are all moved, this is what we're going through. We know at the end it's a checkmate. But what do we say in the beginning of that prayer? Before we say Mishaneh Aitim U'Mahalif Vezimanim, we start the prayer, Poteach She'arim B'tbuna. God opens up gates for us with great wisdom. The changing of times and the changing of circumstance and the changing of life, that is a gate that opens, and behind that gate there's great wisdom. There's great opportunity. There's great tikkun for Am Yisrael. That nobody should think that the bad place means that it's a bad for the person. It's not. It's Poteya Sha'arim B'tmuna. God brings them to a certain gate. In Yaakov's example, it was to bring the Shevatim. And in everybody's personal example, it's in order to serve God under these situations, in order to reach a perfection of some sort. We don't always know the answer immediately. But specifically in Arbit, we remind ourselves that no matter where I'm going, it's a gate of wisdom. Poteya Sha'arim B'tmuna. Now I can accept. Whatever you're going to change from day to day. Of course, we don't wish. We wish the stability of Yaakov of 63 years. But that's not the reality. Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu. And that's why the Gemara says, Kol HaKoveya Makom Netfilato. El Roi Avraham Be'ezro. The Gemara says, you're supposed to pray in a specific place. You're supposed to have same seats, like we used to say when we were kids. You sit in the same seat, the same place. That's your seat. You're not supposed to every day, one time you sit over there, one day you sit over there. It's not a baseball game. You're supposed to sit every day, your permanent seat, where you sit and pray to God. That's called Koveya Makom Netfilato. But I once saw an interpretation. The Gemara is not only telling you where you're supposed to sit when you pray, or where you're supposed to stand. It's telling you what you're supposed to pray for. Hakoveya makom netfilato. Your prayer should be that you should accept that wherever place God puts us in life, we'll be able to endure it. That whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts us in a makom, that the makom should give us the, what the Maharal said, the endurance, the stability, that we should overcome it, that we should pass the test, that we shouldn't surrender to the place, that we should overcome it. And then, Poteya She'arim, then God will show us what was behind it. Baruch Gozer Mkayem. With every challenge, God also gives us the ability to withstand it. Baruch Gozer. He makes Gezerot. Baruch Mkayem. At the same time, He gives us Kiyum. He gives us the ability to pass through the hard times. The good news is that Yaakov Abinu passes everything. And at the end, he leaves the world in peace. All the troubles are behind him. And that's an indication to us as well. That the troubles of this exile will be behind us. The sun will eventually rise. And then Am Yisrael will enjoy a great future. But as we're still going through the end, we must hold on. Vayifga b'makom. That's the tefillah of Arbit, and that's the tefillah of the Emunah Kol Zot.